For the week of May 10th, this is Showbiz Sandbox, Episode 3, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news-making headlines around the entertainment world. I'm Karen Woodward in Los Angeles.
And in Los Angeles as well, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
Hello.
And this is our third podcast, and I think we're actually getting a little bit better at this.
So, I hope so.
So if this is the third time you've listened to us, then, well, thank you, and
hang out. We'll get better.
Certainly, we're learning as we go along, and we're hoping to make these things shorter as we go along. Each one has been about an hour.
Yeah, we want 40 minutes max.
Right, but we don't want to cut it too short.
No, we don't. All right. Moving along.
Moving along.
Starting.
Well, I would say that probably the biggest story of this week was Star Trek.
Yeah.
It was certainly the biggest thing on Twitter.
Did you see the movie?
Yeah, I saw it up at Show Canada.
We talked about this last week.
Yes. I saw it on IMAX, actually.
But you're still not going to say what you thought about it, right?
Oh, no, I actually enjoyed it quite a bit.
Oh.
I'm not a big Trekkie, and I thought it was incredibly enjoyable, and I was engaged the entire time. And did you see it?
No, I haven't seen it yet. I do plan on seeing it.
You should definitely see it. It's well worth seeing. It made $72.5 million over 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and an additional $4 million on Thursday when it showed, I think, at 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock, depending on what the movie theater nearest you did.
The thing that's so interesting about this movie is that, like, I know people who were scheduling like 2 weeks in advance, like when they were going to see it, and like bought tickets immediately. And the fact that this movie made less than Wolverine, I don't know anybody who was like, I have to see Wolverine right away. I mean, obviously, there were a lot of people because Wolverine made more than Star Trek, but I personally didn't know anybody who was as excited to see Wolverine as they were to see Star Trek.
Well, I was really excited to see Star Trek, and I'm not a big science fiction fan, nor am I a big Star Trek fan, that's for sure. I never watched the TV show. I can barely remember any of the old movies. So for me, I thought it was a fun ride.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think that a lot of people who saw Star Trek were necessarily Trekkies. I think that true Trekkies at this point are probably, this is a horrible thing to say, but, you know, really old and, like, not getting out to the movies on opening weekend.
That's a good point. So what you're saying is this movie might have legs.
Yeah, I'm sure it will, because people who are diehard Trekkies at this point really are, like, they're in their 40s and 50s.
Right.
If not older.
And if I'm not mistaken, I read somewhere that Star Trek made $73 million in the international market, which would put it at about $140 million for the weekend.
And still a good deal less than Wolverine.
A good deal less than Wolverine, but Wolverine did come in second.
See, Wolverine's got legs too.
Yeah, it fell 68% though.
Made 27. Almost expected. Everybody saw it opening weekend.
That's true. It made $27 million. But
yeah, that's nothing to sneeze at.
Right. And that's only in the United States. Its 10-day cum in the United States is $129.6 million.
Yeah, well, numbers are boring.
Well,
I just find it fascinating that Star Trek didn't do as well as Wolverine.
So you're saying the X-Men group beat out the Star Trek group?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
So if numbers are boring, do you not want to know about Ghost of Girlfriends Past?
Oh, yeah, no, tell me.
32% it fell off.
Hey, that's not bad.
Of course, this is the Matthew McConaughey, Jennifer Garner film.
Quote-unquote romantic comedy.
Yes, and actually you're right, that is not bad. Most films open and then drop about 40 to 50%, so it dropping 32% is actually pretty good. It made $10.5 million to come in third place, and to date it's made $30.2 million.
So like everybody who saw Wolverine last weekend went and saw Ghost of Girlfriends Past this weekend, or Star Trek, if they couldn't get tickets to Star Trek.
Well, and you know who didn't see Wolverine last weekend or this weekend?
People in Mexico?
Yes, the people in Mexico.
Because I think it's not just Wolverine. I think a lot of studios didn't, they rolled back all of their movies that were going to be showing in Mexico.
That's right. So what was rolled back? Wolverine, Star Trek, Terminator, Angels and Demons. Everything was pushed back because, of course, Mexico, first off, shut its movie theaters for nearly 2 weeks.
Right.
And then once they opened this past Wednesday, it looked like a lot of the theaters were half empty. And so,
now, did these movies eventually roll out in Mexico, or have they not been released in Mexico?
Well, Fox actually is releasing Wolverine. It was to open on May 9th, and it's been pushed back.
Oh, so they are going to roll them out eventually.
They are going to roll them out eventually. Wolverine on May 29th, Night at the Museum 2 on June 12th.
Well, you know, I was out of town this weekend, and we were talking a lot about the swine flu, or as my coworker likes to call it, the swan flu, which I think is hysterical. And I hear it's ending. Do you hear that?
I haven't heard a thing about the swine flu. I can tell you that people who watch telenovelas in Mexico will be happy.
Well, that's what I'm getting to, because like they stopped kissing in telenovelas in Mexico, just in case. Which, if you really think about it, is ridiculous, because they may not be kissing, but they're still breathing on one another. And like, I don't watch telenovelas, but I mean, are they walking around in like doctor's masks? I mean, if you're not going to kiss, you might as well go all the way, right? Or not go all the way. And but wear masks. Everybody can be wearing a mask. It could be like the 1918 Spanish flu epidemic.
And, well, you know, in movie theaters down there, there was an article, I think in Variety or the Hollywood Reporter, I can't remember, about how the movie theaters were opening and all of the people who worked at the movie theaters had to wear gloves when handling food. And after every screening...
Oh, like that's like a new thing? They didn't have to before?
In the United States, they don't wear gloves when they handle popcorn, do they?
No, but they should, now that I think about it.
You should start a campaign.
I'm going to do that.
And the funny thing is they actually are mopping down the theaters between screenings with some bleach and ammonia, and they're spraying, they're disinfecting the theater after each showing.
Okay, doesn't that make you think about how often movie theaters clean and disinfect as it is?
Well, you know, if they don't want to go see movies in a movie theater, you can actually go and see movies now. Act it out.
Stage.
Yeah, that's right. Act it out before you. The other big news story this week was the fact that the Tony nominations were announced. And Billy Elliot seems to be leading the pack.
Well, what I think is interesting about this, and first of all, I love theater, but not living in New York, I don't go to see it very often. But what I think is really interesting, I think it's the point you're about to make, is that almost all of the Tony nominated productions were based on movies.
That's right. You had Shrek. You had Billy Elliot.
What I noticed is that, you know, you have to have star power with the Tonys these days. We've got Kristen Scott Thomas in The Seagull, which, by the way, is it just me or is The Seagull always playing on Broadway? Carla Gugino in Desire Under the Elms, which I've never heard of. I don't think it's based on a movie. Nathan Lane, Bill Irwin, John Goodman in Waiting for Godot, which is another one, I swear to God, is always playing on Broadway. The importance of star power. Now, what's going to happen to... you know, real, quote-unquote, real, like, theater actors. I mean, some of our best actors have come from theater.
They're going to become television actors.
Well, because these people, like Carla Gugino and Kristen Scott Thomas and Nathan Lane, can't really get, you know, they're not really castable. As talented as they may be, they're really not.
Well, Nathan Lane is castable.
Yeah, but Carla Gugino is a show killer, so the only place for her to go is Broadway, apparently.
Did you mention Jeffrey Rush and Jeff Daniels?
Well, I was going to say with Jeffrey Rush, you know, we're talking about an Academy Award winner, or at least an Academy Award winner, right?
That's right.
Which is very sad. And
he's got his start in theater, so as did Jane Fonda, who is nominated for Best Performance by a Leading Actress in a Play, along with Janet, and she was in 33 Variations. Hope Davis, also a film star, is...
Film star? I hope you're using that term very loosely.
An actress in film.
Yeah, an actress who appears in films. I wouldn't call her a film star.
Right. She was nominated for God of Carnage. Marcia Gay Harden was nominated for God of Carnage. Janet McTeer was nominated for Mary Stuart. And Harriet Walter was nominated for Mary Stuart.
And these are all, like, they're fantastic actors. They really are. But they're just, it's rare that you find them on TV or the movies anymore, with possibly the exception of John Goodman. But, you know, he's getting kind of old. No offense, John.
Well, Stockard Channing, she's a theater actress, and she was nominated for Best Performance by a Leading Actress in a Musical for Pal Joey, along with Sutton Foster for Shrek the Musical, Allison Janney, who, of course, was on The West Wing.
As was Stockard Channing.
Right, she was in 9 to 5, Alice Ripley, Next to Normal, Josefina, I cannot even pronounce it, Scaglione, she's in the revival of West Side Story. And so there's another one, 9 to 5. Based on a film.
Based on a film. Good film. Dated film, but, you know, costumes-wise and such, but never gets old.
What were some of the other ones? You know, I was in London back in September walking through the West End, and I swear I could not believe my eyes when I saw the marquee for Rain Man starring Josh Hartnett.
I'm telling you, it's only a matter of time before they do American Idol the musical. It'll be like an update of Chorus Line that they've already updated, by the way. But think about it. Especially, well, it actually doesn't matter. If Adam Lambert on American Idol, if he wins or doesn't win, I'm sure it's already in the works. American Idol, the musical.
Right.
I'd see it.
Well, you know, there were 43 productions this year that were eligible for nominations. And what a lot of people were talking about was not what was nominated, but what was shut out. Because people like Kristin Scott Thomas, or actresses like Kristin Scott Thomas, who was in The Seagull, which got rave reviews, didn't get nominated. Carla Gugino, also not nominated. Nathan Lane and John Goodman, who were in Waiting for Godot, were not nominated. Maybe that's because that play has seen better days.
You know, it's sad because Kristin Scott Thomas and Carla Gugino are incredibly talented actors, and they always manage to get completely shafted. Like Kristin Scott Thomas for I've Loved You So Long, she should have gotten nominated for that and for an Academy Award and wasn't nominated. People don't care about her. She was the best thing about Four Weddings and a Funeral. Can't manage to get nominated for anything to save her life. Poor Kristin Scott Thomas. Poor Carla Gugino, show killer. Anyway,
well,
moving on. Well, no, I want to continue talking about musicals because I want to talk about the fact that Bono and The Edge are teaming up to do the Spider-Man musical.
Now, that's something I'd see. As a matter I'd actually pay for a ticket for that right now. And it's not even cast yet.
Yeah, that'll be really interesting because, I mean, are they gonna hire stars to do it? I'll bet you anything they do.
Actually, what they're really looking for, they said that they are looking for... For Peter Parker, they're looking for a, quote, great pop rock voice. And for Mary Jane, they're looking for the same thing, but in a girl. So they're looking
Here's what I recommend. Adam Lambert from American Idol for Peter Parker, and Allison, whatever her name is, Ellie Tahara or whatever, who just got voted off last week. That's my 2 cents. Bono, Edge, are you listening?
Well, it'll be interesting. Bono and The Edge doing musical theater. I mean...
I think it's fantastic. I think it's brilliant. I think Bono is so smart.
Well, be that as it may, you know, Julie Taymor is actually going to be directing it. And, of course, she did The Lion King. And I believe one other big hit musical that I can't remember.
Well, but she's best known for The Lion King. That's all that really matters.
Yes. She's a very good theatrical director. She did an opera called Grendel as well, known really for working with a lot of puppets.
Which sort of scares me, because is she going to lose the cool factor for Spider-Man? I mean, how involved are Bono and The Edge really going to be?
I have no idea, but don't you think this is the kind of thing that critics are just salivating over? They just want to get their hands on this so that they can pan it. They're looking for anything. They're going to be looking for anything in this to pan it.
Well, theater critics will, for sure. But what I think is interesting is the type of audience that goes to see Spider-Man the movie and who reads the comic books, are they going to go to Broadway?
I can tell you this, knowing a couple of diehard Spider-Man comic book collectors, they are ecstatic. The only reason I knew about this is because a Spider-Man fan, a fan of the comics, sent me the link.
Well, you know, that's who I would care more about. I would care less about critics and more about fans.
They're doing a 29-hour rehearsed reading on July 12th and 13th in New York City. And right now they're doing open casting calls.
Wait. First of all, what is a 29-hour rehearsed reading?
I have no idea.
It's going to last for an entire day and 4 hours?
I don't know.
5 hours?
That's what Spin Magazine says.
I don't know. Wait, let's go.
It's in New York. We're both in Los Angeles.
Well, we have time. It's in July.
Well, rehearsals will begin on July 2nd, but I can tell you rehearsals will not begin on July 2nd for yet another piece of derivative theater, the sequel to The Phantom of the Opera that Andrew Lloyd Webber is working.
That is unbelievable.
I agree. I enjoyed Phantom of the Opera back in its day when I was in high school and it was first on Broadway in the late 80s, but I just can't see turning that into a sequel.
Well, I don't know what the story is. I mean, she's dead.
Maybe it's a prequel. I don't know. Papers in London are reporting that the name of the musical, Love Never Dies.
Oh, so maybe she's not dead.
I don't know. They're reporting that it has been pushed back so that some reorchestration of the score can be done. It was supposed to be, I guess, released later this year. Oh, it was supposed to kick off this fall with a premiere in London, followed quickly by productions in Toronto, Gotham, and an undetermined Asian territory.
Yeah, I don't think people are clamoring to see the Phantom of the Opera sequel.
You know what? I wouldn't bet against this one.
I would totally bet against it. It'll open well, if that's the proper term for Broadway, but I bet it dies. Well, you know what I think that people are clamoring for, and I know that you and I are going to disagree on this, is the MTV Movie Awards.
Yeah, I could care less.
No, you know what? At my age, I could too, but I still kind of like to know afterwards. I would never watch them, but I like to know afterwards who won, because I think it's kind of an indication of where the culture is going. And I know that Twilight and Slumdog Millionaire led in nominations. But what I find actually the most fascinating is not necessarily who was nominated, but I'm always interested to know who won and what they said. And I find the categories fascinating. I know.
Don't they have silly categories like best gross out moment or best?
Well, best kiss is really always my favorite.
Right, exactly. They have some weird, really weird categories.
Yeah, and I'm gonna place my vote right now as we speak for Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson for Twilight.
Yeah, I wonder who's gonna win these awards. Could it be Slumdog Millionaire, or could it be Twilight, the movie every teenager in America saw possibly more than once?
It's gonna be Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson for sure. Because the other nominees are Angelina Jolie and James McAvoy in Wanted. It's like, yeah, that was barely a kiss. Frida Pinto and Dev Patel in Slumdog. Yeah, that was really kind of brother and sister kissing. I don't know. James Franco and Sean Penn. Yeah, they might actually win just because that's the way people are.
They want to see them get up on stage and do it all over again.
Yeah, yeah. Vanessa Hudgens and Zac Efron for High School Musical. I don't know. Tweeners aren't going to be – they're not going to be voting, I don't think. And then there's Paul Rudd and Thomas Lennon for I Love You, Man. But, yeah, I don't think that movie did as well as people want.
I don't think anybody saw that movie.
Yeah, no one saw that movie. So I'm placing my vote for Twilight, and mark my words, I will win.
Well, now will it win Best Picture as well against Slumdog Millionaire?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think Slumdog will probably win Best Picture.
Just so that MTV can say, we're hip too.
Most likely it will win, but I wouldn't be surprised if it didn't. Because at this point, MTV is we're hip too, and they're going to it'll be something completely unexpected. And I think best movie, I'm going to vote for it right now, is Dark Knight.
Well, who do you think is going to win here? This is for what? Best song from a movie, best song from a movie. Hannah Montana for Cyrus.
Yeah, she's going to win.
Or.
Don't read me the rest. She's going to win.
Well, Bruce Springsteen.
No. Are you kidding me? People who vote for the MTV Movie Awards, they don't know who Bruce Springsteen is. They don't care. It's old.
I was kidding.
Oh, okay.
Actually, yeah.
Okay. Maybe we should move on.
Well, you know, another award ceremony that some people think is just as silly as the MTV Movie Awards, though it didn't start out that way, is the Webbies. And there was a lot of internet hoo-ha earlier this week when it seemed like the Webbies made up awards just to give them away to celebrities.
Well, I mean, it's probably their way of, is it disgusting? Yes. Is it wrong? Yes. But they probably did it because they need to make the Webbies relevant.
Well, the Webbies were and are the internet version of the Academy Awards. They were given out to websites of note and software of note in some cases, but really hot websites and web applications.
But see, here's the issue with that. The internet, in terms of, when people surf it, people, you know, everyone's on the internet, you know, duh. But the Webbies are not sexy.
No, and actually,
no one cares.
You're absolutely right. And Leo Laporte, who is a radio personality and does a lot of tech podcasts, on his podcast Net at Night with Amber MacArthur, went off for a good 5 minutes about how the Webbies have lost their edge and how they're just making awards up to suit big media and to suit the celebrities, just to get them there to try and rev up some interest in in this award show.
It's a smart business move.
Well, it's a smart business move, but, you know, is it a, it's a smart short-term business move. I wonder if it's a smart long-term business move.
Yes, I absolutely think so.
Well, Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails got Artist of the Year for releasing an album for free online. Now, quite honestly, out of all the celebrities that were, that won awards, he, of all of them, I think, is most deserving because he really is a webhead. He's on Twitter all the time, and he really, he released all of this footage of his concerts that people could then edit.
He and did, his albums, that he was one of the first people to release them without a label online.
That's right. Now, Jimmy Fallon also got one for Person of the Year. The guy's been a late-night talk show host of about a week and a half.
So wrong. I think the reason they gave that to him is because he promoted his show. He really used Twitter to promote his show.
That's true. He did.
And that was really smart. I mean, he's kind of Ashton Kutcher'd his show that way. And I think he does things – I've never seen the show. It's on too late for me. I think he does things – like Twitters throughout the show or like right before, right after. But he's smart that he uses, you know, he uses the internet to promote his show. If they want to give it to him because of that, that's fine. But yeah, they made him, what did you just say? Person of the Year?
Person of the Year. Sarah Silverman. Sarah Silverman, the comedian, got Best Actress for making two entire web videos. The first, of course, is a name we're not allowed to really say, but it's I'm Effing Matt Damon, and the Great Schlep was the second one.
Yeah, and then there's another actress who got, like, Best Comedic Performance.
Lisa Kudrow from Friends.
Yeah, yeah, it's like okay, because what, Sarah Silverman is not a comedian? Lisa Kudrow is not an actress? Shouldn't they have been in the same category?
Well, a full list of winners is online. We'll post them. But big media certainly took home a majority of them. Disney won two awards for Best Family Parenting Site for TheFamily.com and Club Penguin. The Sundance Channel won an award for its movie film website. HBO won for Flight of the Conchords Dub Lab. ESPN,
good for them.
ESPN won the Best Sports Website.
Yeah, what a surprise that was.
NBC won an award for web spinoff Heroes the Recruit. People's Choice Prize for Best Drama Episode. And speaking of which...
Speaking of NBC, they announced their schedule this week. Can we talk about that?
Sure.
Is it time? Are we done talking about the Webbies?
Right. Well, yes, we are. And I was just, before we get off award shows, I did want to say that if people are interested in voting for the MTV Movie Awards, we'll place the link in the show notes.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. MTV.com/Movie Awards or something along those lines. It shouldn't be hard to find. But yeah, vote.
On to NBC.
On to NBC. Well, it looks like Chuck is going to be picked up.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's not definite yet, but it looks like it's going to get picked up. Medium is most likely going to be picked up, Law and Order.
But only for 13 episodes.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And Medium is only for 13 episodes, and they have a 22-episode deal with Patricia Arquette, so they're going to have to figure out how they're going to work that one.
Yeah, they'll make a full 22. Either that or they'll just pay her out, but my guess is that they would make it. All 22. I'd be very surprised if they didn't. Friday Night Lights. Woohoo! Love that show.
What else?
Celebrity Apprentice. Ugh.
Even I'm not watching that anymore.
He's totally obsessed with it. Do you watch that show?
I used to watch the original Apprentice. I've never watched Celebrity Apprentice.
Yeah, I heard Jesse James was kicked off last week. That really upsets me.
Is he? I've got a question for you. Is he married to Sandra Bullock?
Yeah.
Okay, I had no idea. I couldn't remember who.
How do you not know this?
I'm not one of those people who read Us Weekly. What can I say?
Oh my god, they've got the most adorable marriage.
I don't keep up.
Okay, I just turned into a girl, sorry.
That's good, given your gender. That's good, given your gender.
Yeah. I'd be in big trouble if I wasn't. Saturday Night Live update on Thursdays. Remember how they did that during the election?
Yeah, that was funny.
Doing it again.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating? I would totally watch that. I mean, it's smart. It's like they're basically doing the Daily Show. Same idea.
You mean ripping off?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what? Yes and no, because technically the Daily Show, you could argue, ripped off Saturday Night Live Weekend Update.
Good point.
And, you know, a lot of people actually get their news from the Daily Show, and I get my news from Rachel Maddow. But I get my news from the Daily Show occasionally too, but I would watch this to get my news. I really would. Does that make me pathetic?
No, because I actually watch the Daily Show more than I watch the news.
Yeah, see, most people do. Here's another one that was picked up in terms of unscripted. Tony Robbins, the self-help guru.
Oh, that could be interesting.
Yeah, he's going to have his own show.
Well, they also picked up 4 new dramas.
Yeah, we talked about that last week. Day One, Parenthood, Mercy, and 100 Questions.
Right.
Which we talked about last week, described what they all are. It's, you know, there's nothing new and exciting here. It's about hospitals, and Parenthood, obviously, is about the movie. Replicability again.
That's right. Speaking of replicability, how funny would it be if they did a movie, Billy Elliot, the musical, the movie? So it's a movie based on a musical based on a movie.
Hey, you laugh? I wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
Yeah.
Also in TV news, I loved this. Okay, they reordered Fringe again, which really doesn't surprise me.
Well, and they also reordered Heroes, but Fringe is not on NBC, is it?
No, Fringe is on Fox. Oh yeah, they did. They renewed Heroes, which really surprises me because I don't know anybody who thinks that show is good anymore.
I've never watched it to begin with.
I watched the pilot and I hated it, and then it was such a big hit, so I was clearly wrong. But you know, the writing staff changed so much that, you know, they made all these bad moves, and, you know, from what I gather, it's a terrible show now.
Well, I don't watch Fringe either.
You know, I started to watch it, but then I got really sort of bored. I don't like Anna Torv, who plays the lead in it, at all. I find her really cold and uninteresting. It's John Noble, who plays the mad scientist in the show, who's much more interesting. And then Josh Jackson, who's best known as Pacey on Melrose Place. I mean, on Melrose Place. I'm getting to that next. Dawson's Creek. He's in it as well as the mad scientist's son. And he's horribly underused.
What is this show about? It's a J.J. Abrams show, right?
It's a J.J. Abrams show. It's about...
And we should say J.J. Abrams, who did Felicity, who does Heroes, who does Lost, who just directed Star Trek.
No. J.J. Abrams does not do Heroes.
He doesn't do Heroes. Like I was saying,
Heroes
he doesn't do
Heroes.
Heroes
was the only thing that Greg Grunberg, the actor, got, you know, without writing J.J. Abrams' coattails.
Okay.
But that's another story.
You know what? I've got to be honest with you. The reason I thought that J.J. Abrams produced that show is because of Greg Grunberg. I thought he produced that show because he was on it.
No, this is literally the only job that Greg Grunberg has gotten himself. It's about, you know, it's funny. I don't know what it's about. It's sort of like Alias. It's about this FBI woman who's played by Anna Torv, who is investigating this like odd series of, you know, things that are happening. So it's kind of Alias crossed with X-Files. And I thought it was going to be really good because I would love Alias crossed with X-Files. I mean, it sounds awesome, right? But the first show, she had to like bust out. She needed to get to the mad scientist played by John Noble because he was the only person who had the answers to what was going on. And she needed Josh Jackson, whose character, I can't remember his name. She needed to get him to get his father out of this mental institution. And it was so convoluted and it was not interesting. Apparently the ratings dropped, but then they went up again. And, you know, it's J.J. Abrams. I'm sure that helped. But I want to talk more about other things that were and were not picked up. Melrose Place.
So now this is on the CW, right?
It's on the CW. Right. Yes, thank you, because I always forget to do this. Melrose Place, the remake, definitely picked up. The Gossip Girl spinoff, definitely not picked up. Now, of course, the Gossip Girl spinoff was a spinoff of Lily, who's played by Kelly Rutherford. She's the mom on Gossip Girl. It's the spinoff is a throwback to her days as, you know, early 20s.
Or would have been a throwback.
It's what?
Or would have been a throwback.
Yeah, it is a throwback. They did film it.
Good point.
They wrote it.
Yeah, good point.
And it takes place in the 1980s in Los Angeles, and it's the story of Lily as a groupie, and Brittany Snow played Lily, and Kristen Ritter, who's from best known from what is it called, Gilmore Girls. They play, you know, the two girls in the show, and apparently it was awful. And I watched Gossip Girl religiously, and it's supposed to be on tomorrow night, so on May 11th. So by the time this is up on the site, it will have already aired. But last week, they had, you know, next week on, and I was like, oh, God, it's a spinoff. And it looked awful. I'm not going to watch Gossip Girl this week because it looks awful. And clearly, I don't need to watch it because spinoff is not going to happen.
Well, something that is happening is The Beauty Life. Do you know anything about this show?
I've never even heard of it.
And another one that might be going at the CW is Vampire Diaries.
Yeah, can we say let's hop on the Twilight bandwagon?
Wait a second. Isn't Beauty Life something... I believe Elle McPherson is in that.
Oh, yeah. Is that the one that's kind of a ripoff of America's Next Top Model?
I think so. I know Ashton Kutcher has something to do with it.
Well, of course it's picked up. That doesn't surprise me for a second.
Well, these are all shows that either I will not be watching or don't watch now. Well, if you don't like any of these scripted dramas and comedies, you can watch the remakes of Let's Make a Deal and The Dating Game, because CBS is going to be, or at least is thinking about, remaking or refashioning those game shows. Probably not for prime time.
They'll do it. Not for prime time?
No, I don't think it's for prime time. I think it's probably going to be a daytime thing.
Because they're getting rid of so many soap operas, right?
Probably. Because you have to actually write a soap opera.
Ah, which brings us to our next topic.
That's correct. Variety ran a story, I think it was Cynthia Littleton wrote the story.
I don't know my Variety scribes.
She wrote a story, and I'm going to quote here. There's also a feeling among studio and net execs that there's fat to be trimmed and that writing staffs have ballooned beyond necessity. And essentially, this was a story about how network television shows are trimming their writing staff. Industry sources say studios producing skeins, which is a...
Such a stupid word.
Yes, it's a bad word, and it basically means television show. So studios producing television shows for Big Four networks are pushing for cuts as much as 10 to 15% in the writing budget for returning series, while new shows will start out with smaller staffs than first-year shows in recent seasons.
Well, like Southland, as the new show on NBC with Ben McKenzie, has got only four writers, not including the showrunner.
Right, but...
Or that does, maybe it does. But in most cases, that it's not going to.
Right, well, that was only ordered for six episodes, so that might have something to do with it.
Well, it was picked up.
Good point.
Yeah, so, I don't know, I mean... What do you think about this?
The average is between 10 to 12 writers, and they're looking to go down to 6 to 8 writers. So it will be very interesting to see how that affects the actual dramatic...
TV show?
Yeah, the actual show.
See, here's what I think. I'm all for it. I cut the writing staff. There are writing staffs that are like 10, 12 people. And all TV shows, I don't know if people know this, really are written by committee. They'll have, like, one person or, like, a writing team that will head, like, one particular episode. And then, you know, next week it'll be another person.
Right, and that person actually gets credit for writing the show.
Even though everybody writes it.
That's correct. Now, and it's just this thing that everybody knows that's the way TV is written. So if you're a TV writer, you just kind of accept it.
Yeah. But, you know, how big a committee do you need, really? Because at what point does it become groupthink? At what point is it too many cooks in the kitchen? I'm all for it. Trim the fat. I don't know if four writers is too little, but certainly six would be fine.
I don't know.
You don't need 12 writers for a drama. It's complete insanity.
Well, as you know, staffing season, as it's known here in the entertainment industry, is, well, it's actually right about now. Now that shows are being picked up, they start getting staffed with writers. So there are a ton of television writers out there. And if they're not going to be working, I don't know what's going to happen to this town.
Well, they're already screwed because of NBC and, you know, bringing Jay Leno in for Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock. That automatically took out five dramas.
Good point. So you're talking about figure 50 writers right there.
Yeah.
Good
point. So it's really interesting. And, you know, part of the reason is trimming fat. Yeah, but part of that trimming of fat is that with the writer's deal after the writer's strike, they're getting paid for residuals on internet.
Oh, that's true.
So that's even more money that's getting shelled out.
Well, and because of the internet, because of DVDs, syndication revenue is falling. And therefore, what used to be a sure thing, you would do 4 years of a show, you would then put it into syndication, and reruns would air on TBS or TNT or whatever network would pick them up, Lifetime, whichever cable network would pick them up, either here in the United States or North America or overseas. Nowadays, there's no call for syndication because you've got an entire season out on DVD, usually within a year, and you've got it airing on iTunes, so you can buy it off of iTunes. And then finally, you could watch the episodes on something like Hulu.
Right, so network affiliates are furious, which is a whole different story.
That's a whole, yeah, that's a whole...
A whole different story, but the internet, and this is, we do a whole show on this, how the internet is it's completely changing the financial structure of TV.
Right, so this is really just a trickle-down effect, but what it's going to do is there will be another trickle-down effect with people even further behind the scenes, such as agents and producers and managers, because if an agent can't place 50 writers, or if an agency can't place 50 writers, then they don't need 30 agents in their television department.
Yeah. They need, you know, 20, 15. And if all those people are laid off, I mean, it trickles down just like we learned in the strike. You know, not only does it trickle down to that level, but then if these people are unemployed, then there's less money to be spending on flowers and gift baskets and restaurants.
You know what? We are in the wrong industry in the wrong town.
Yeah, we really are. And speaking of trickling down, really not exactly trickling down, but it's the same idea, the same effect with the networks and the Nielsen delay.
Oh my God, yeah, that's right. Thank goodness. That's right. There, earlier this week, there was a huge delay in the Nielsen overnight ratings coming out. And just to kind of bring people up to speed, Nielsen is and always has been the...
It's a rating system. It's always been rather sketchy. It chooses certain families or certain households based on what, I do not know. And it's so old-fashioned. What they used to do, actually, is they used to just physically write it in. And at this point, I think that they actually have boxes that can tell what they're watching. So I don't think they have to fill out the forms anymore. But it's always been really sketchy as to whether they're telling the truth, whether they were even in the room when they watched it.
That's the real
thing.
Which
actually gets to our next story. But it's always been a very sketchy way of you know, monitoring this. And Nielsen's really the only one that does it.
Well, that's right.
But they had a bit of a computer bug this week.
That's right. And that's what they blame the delay on. And sometimes there's delays in the overnights around holiday weekends because either the staffing isn't there or the numbers aren't in a timely fashion. But they had this computer bug which caused a server malfunction and prevented the Sunday night ratings from being properly reported. And then, kind of in domino fashion, led to delays with Monday night's ratings and Tuesday night's ratings. And they finally released Sunday's numbers midday on Wednesday.
Now, okay, I know that you know, kind of sort of sucks, but ultimately, who cares? I mean, I don't understand why this is a story. I think it's funny, but I don't understand why it's a story.
Well, Gary Holmes of Nielsen, a Nielsen spokesperson, said, the reason for the delay of Sunday's numbers, they could have released them sooner, but he says, we wanted to make sure the data we were going to put out subsequently was correct, which caused a further delay. The data itself is accurate. We recognize the inconvenience to our clients, and we're working as hard as we can to get the ratings out as soon as we can.
Yeah, that sounds weird and sketchy, and like probably some assistant made an error or something. It just sounds weird, and frankly, I really don't understand why we care.
Well, you know,
I know TV execs care, but why should I care? I don't care.
TV execs care, and one reason we should care is because Nielsen, being the ratings god that they are, they're really a monopoly. And television executives have always said that they really don't like having just one group hold this kind of influence over them.
Oh, I agree. That I agree with. I totally agree with that.
And the reason we should care is because it's those ratings that actually
determine what we watch.
That's correct.
What's still on the air.
That is correct. And effectively, the networks get paid through television advertising based on their ratings.
Right. Ratings, of course, being how many people are watching it. It's very complicated, but, you know, it's ratings and shares. And it's like how many people are watching TV at any given time. And of those people watching TV, how many people are watching this particular show?
Well, did you read that Business Week article about television engagement? Because it's going to get more complicated.
Do I look like somebody who reads Business Week?
That is a loaded question, because if I say...
What do they say? What do they say? Fill me in.
Business Week did a little backstory first by explaining to readers that advertisers have relied on Nielsen ratings to know how much they should pay for television advertising. But they never really knew whether the person that they were told was watching was actually watching, or whether they were out at the refrigerator getting a snack, or in the bathroom, or sleeping, or the TV was on and somebody forgot to turn it off. Now, what this company AIG is doing, that they're profiling.
No, it's IAG.
IAG.
It's IAG.
Sorry. IAG. Should tell you what's on everybody's minds these days.
Yeah.
It's a research firm, and they began asking viewers back in 2004 how well they actually recalled the programs and the ads that they saw. And the more viewers could recall and say what they liked, the higher the rating. It was an engagement rating, which a lot of advertisers are talking about these days, is how are viewers or listeners engaged in the actual content that they're watching or listening to.
Well, so, and that's important because oftentimes they're not.
Well, if you have 20 million, and that's the big thing about podcasts, frankly, is you might have 20 million people watching American Idol, but how many of them are actually watching it? You might have 200,000 people listening to a podcast like this, but they're really listening. They're really tuned into it. They had to go to iTunes and download it. They had to put it onto their iPod. They actually had to do something.
Well, it's because the computer is a lean-forward medium. It makes people, you have to be engaged in order to get anything out of it.
Well, the articles in Business Week, we'll put a link to it in the show notes. An interesting quote here is from Alan Wurzel, the president for research and media development at NBC Universal. He says, engagement ratings are proving very useful for advertisers, but they aren't to the point where we can replace traditional Nielsen ratings as the hard currency for pricing deals.
And yeah, Nielsen's not going away.
Nielsen's not going away. Neither is Hulu.
Yeah, new media isn't going away, says Bob Iger.
That's right. And you want to talk about...
Disney's Bob Iger. Gee, Bob, thanks. Thanks for that bulletin.
Well, I mean, you want to talk about engaged. When you're watching Hulu, you cannot fast forward through a commercial.
I know, which is why I get bored and I don't watch TV on Hulu. And they will never sponsor us now. Go on.
I watch Hulu all the time. And quite honestly, he says here, we believe the broader distribution of our content makes sense given the growth in online viewing. But this is the key. This is the key. If Disney and others don't make programming available on a well-timed, well-priced basis, consumers will find it anyway. And I have to say, this week, my TiVo screwed up and I didn't record Lost. I know. I was livid. But you know what it is? It's those darn IR blasters, those things that like connect from your cable box to the TiVo, and it's those infrared things that are supposed to change the channel for you but never do and frustrate you so hard, so much.
No, I have no idea what you're talking about, but I assume that that went kablooey.
Yes, and so it didn't change the channel, so I recorded an hour of Comedy Central. Long story short, it took me less than 2 days to find Lost online, that particular episode, and I downloaded it in 40 minutes.
Well, wasn't it up on ABC.com the next day?
Yes, it was indeed, actually. I never thought of it that way. I suppose it was. Is the whole thing...
Don't you ever listen to our podcasts? Did we or did we not talk about this last week?
But wait, was it on Hulu already?
No, I think it goes up on ABC.com first. I think it goes up on Hulu maybe the day after. Or maybe they're up at the same time. I don't know. But I know that it's up on ABC.com the next day.
Well, Bob Iger did this interview while I look up whether Lost is actually on ABC and whether I just wasted 40 minutes of my life.
Yeah, that really scares me that you didn't do this.
I don't know what... You know what it is? I immediately went to the most nerdiest, geekiest thing I could do, thinking that that was the only way to get the content. And that speaks volumes for what the industry has done in training its viewers where to turn for this content.
What? I'm perfectly well trained. I would have gone to ABC.com immediately.
I was trying to look for an out there, and I...
Well, okay, but okay, no, I'll give it to you. The reason why I'm well trained is because I used to write about this stuff, so I know everything that is on every single network's website. That's the only reason why I know this stuff. I'm not really sure actually what the story is here. I mean, I know that they're doing a movie subscription service, which is kind of what Sony is doing with Crackle. Because I don't think that Disney's doing it with Hulu, which is sort of weird because they're putting all of their TV shows on Hulu, but whatever. That's really all I know about this story. But to me, is the big thing to talk about is that Disney is once again behind the ball, which is really rather weird because they're sort of well known for being ahead of it.
One of the interesting things here is, as you said, they're doing their own movie website, channel, whatever you want to call it, but it's an online movie portal.
And people have to pay for it.
But also was that there was some debate, he says, over whether to go with YouTube or Hulu. The thinking was that YouTube was really for short form, whereas Hulu had made a name for itself in long form. But what did it all come down to? That's right.
But actually, you know what? I never thought about it that way. That's really interesting that Hulu is known for long form. That's interesting.
He says here, we decided we would go where we could own a piece of it and really participate in what could be a real growth of an aggregator.
Well, there's that argument, but you could also argue that they should have gone on to YouTube because YouTube is allowing, you know, you have your own YouTube channel and you can get advertising. You get paid for the advertising on it. So you could argue that they could have made money, same amount of money either way. Although they own a stake in Hulu, don't they?
Yes, 30%.
Yeah, well, good for them.
Well, you know what the MPAA is allowing? This is probably the most absurd story of the week, in my opinion.
What?
The MPAA in trying to... Now, the MPAA is the Motion Picture Association of America. They're the group that the... It's a studio lobbying group. They also give movies their ratings here in the United States.
Yeah, that's all people really care about, is the fact that they rate our movies.
Right, but they were in Washington this past week, or recently, fighting the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, because in that act, it allows an owner of a DVD to rip one copy of the DVD for backup purposes. So you're allowed to rip. And of course, because of that, there's all this ripping software that's not illegal.
I love that.
Now, they're also the group that is the anti-piracy group for movies that are shown in movie theaters. And of course, one of the big fights they have on their hands is the recording of movies on camcorders in the movie theater itself. So as a way to explain to the group that's doing the DMCA review, as they do every couple of years, they actually showed this group how teachers who would need to show clips of videos to their students could actually, rather than ripping those clips right off the DVD on their computer, could instead put a camcorder pointed at a flat screen television and record it off the television. There is a video online that shows this whole presentation that was given. And I'm just going to read here from the article that was in that was on Boing Boing. It says here, the Electronic Frontier Foundation's Fred von Lohmann says, quote, hearings for the DMCA triennial rulemaking are going on this week in D.C., so I guess it was this past week, where the educational community is asking for an exemption to rip DVDs to take clips for classroom use. The MPAA responded with a video showing how to camcord movies from a flat-screen monitor, arguing that educators and students should do this instead of ripping DVDs.
Okay, so they're basically teaching people how to steal.
Correct. Well, they're saying that's what should be done instead of ripping the DVDs.
That's equally preposterous, isn't it?
That it's unbelievable. This is the funniest bit, though. He says, in the words of media literacy researcher Martine Courant-Reif, that's like typing up a quote from a book, taking it outside, chiseling the words in a rock, photographing the rock, scanning the photo, and running OCR on it. And for what? That line is hilarious because it's exactly what it's like.
I never fail to be surprised at how stupid people are.
The MPAA, this is counter to everything they're trying to do in movie theaters. And it's remarkable that nobody stopped them from making this presentation.
No, that doesn't surprise me at all. Is it remarkable? Yes. But is it surprising? No. No, people are stupid.
Well, while online video seems to be booming, music is hurting. Warner Music, Edgar Bronfman's company, right, said that digital music, it only grew for the first or second quarter that ended in March for them, 7% to $166 million. Far slower than the 48% growth posted a year ago. And of course, CD sales fell 25%. pulling down all music sales 18% to $537 million.
Well, the music business is going to be like TV and how it restructures itself. The music business is in huge trouble. I mean, it's certainly not news, but what
well,
I
musicians,
think...
musicians are coming... Musicians are turning into buskers again.
Yeah.
They're going to get paid.
I don't see that there's
think,
anything wrong with that.
Well, there could be something wrong with that if all of a sudden there was no more music.
Well, that will never be the case. Music will become free.
You think so?
Yeah, I do think so.
Certainly, Warner's is getting out of digital music. They took a $33 million write-down on some investments they made in iMeme and Lala, which are two social networking sites for music discovery. And they are really upset with MySpace Music, as are most record companies. According to CNET, they reported earlier this week that at a MySpace Music board meeting last month, the company's CEO, Courtney Holt, got an earful from several music label representatives, unhappy about the lack of money they're making.
Huh. Wow, well, that's a surprise. MySpace
actually, it's not a surprise. When you think about it,
no,
MySpace is known
sarcastic.
As...
MySpace Music sucks, first of all. MySpace itself sucks. I don't know if we talked about this, but MySpace, just as a portal, is... It's poorly designed. The code is awful. I think it kind of tripped its way into being successful. But MySpace Music is... Have you ever looked at any of the sites?
I actually find a lot of music on MySpace, but I hate going to MySpace.
That's exactly my point. I mean, there is music there. There's plenty of music there, but it's so hard to find anything. It's so hard to navigate. They've done such a bad job of putting the whole thing together that it doesn't surprise me that they're getting an earful. In terms of making money off it, good luck, people. Stop trying to make money off of digital, off of MP3s. That's not going to happen. Music is going to have to be free, and everyone's going to make money by touring.
Right. Well, now that, you know, Madonna charges $400 for her concert tickets, as do the Rolling Stones, you know, I don't see why they can't make a living doing that.
That's the way it's going to be.
Somebody
so you better
as hell
hope that you are Live Nation or, you know, any of those other companies that do this, and there will be more. Because anybody who's trying to make money off of digital downloads is just so behind the ball right now. It's not the way that the industry is going.
Well, I think you probably can make money on digital downloads. You just have to figure out how.
Well, yeah, well,
because I'll be honest with you.
People always find suckers who will buy it. I mean, I'm on iTunes buying music. I mean, I know there are ways of finding the stuff that I'm buying for free, but I'm just not tech savvy enough to do it. You will always find suckers who will do it.
I think it should be volunteer based. I think it could be volunteer based. You could download the music, pay for it what you think it's worth.
Like what Radiohead did?
Why? Yeah. I mean, I actually got the Radiohead album from a friend because their website was too trafficked.
Yeah,
it crashed, and I couldn't download it. So in the end, I wound up getting the album from a friend who gave it to me on a USB stick. And about 2 weeks later, I went back and I gave them, I think it was $7 for the album. I didn't even download it.
I think that's interesting. The whole honor code with that, I find it fascinating. Personally, I'm clearly a bad person because if I have the option to pay nothing, I will pay nothing.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I would absolutely I would never pay for a digital download. If I had the option, I wouldn't.
Well, a lot of people are opting for not paying for things these days, including XM Sirius or Sirius XM or whatever their names are now.
Which is the subscriber radio.
Right, and I pay for that as well.
You have? Are you serious?
Somebody gave me an XM
Pardon
radio.
Pardon the
pun. yes. Somebody gave me an XM radio a couple of years ago because I'm a big baseball fan, and they have all of the Major League Baseball channels. So there's, I think, 16 channels of games during the season. And so they gave it to me for my car, and I've subscribed ever since. So I'm a three-year subscriber, but I'm kind of a little annoyed at them because back in February, they sent me this email saying that they were going to start charging $2.99 per month for the online subscription.
No way.
Yes, absolutely. They said first off, they were going to say, we're going to stream music in pure digital quality. And I thought, what was it before? It wasn't digital before?
Yeah, but saying pure digital quality always makes people think that they're getting something better.
I don't know. I thought it was the stupidest thing I had seen them do in a long, long time. I mean, they do stupid things all the time, but that really took the cake.
Well, are you going to pay it?
I did not pay it. Absolutely not. And so now, you know, now I can't listen to XM radio online. Instead, I'll have to listen to the thousands of stations available to me through the iTunes store, or the thousands of stations available to me on the internet, or Last.fm, or Pandora, or AOL Radio. The fact that they think that they can charge $2.99 for this is ridiculous.
No, that's ridiculous.
Well,
by the way, a little plug, my favorite online for music is called OneLlama.com.
How do you spell it?
One-O-N-E, llama, like the animal, L-L-A-M-A.com, OneLlama.com.
So as it sounds.
Exactly. Well, not because it's good necessarily, but because I have an obsession with llamas. So,
so the music's okay, but
music, it's online radio. And sometimes you'll find a good station, although it loses signal a lot, which sort of sucks. But I just like the name of it.
Well, they lost Sirius here, Sirius XM. Now that they're merged, they lost 404,000 subscribers, or 2% of its user base, in the first quarter. That's the first ever quarterly loss in satellite radio history, as if that history goes back so far. It's 10 years old.
Okay, you know what? Good.
Good.
I'm sad if that puts people out of work, but I really don't care that a conglomerate is losing money.
You know what they're really hoping will bring them back?
What?
Their free iPhone app, where you can then pay the $2.99 to listen to their music.
So it's not a free... the app itself is free to download, but it's not free to actually listen to the music?
Well, I don't know. That's actually a good question. I should find out, but I know that...
Otherwise, you're basically downloading an icon, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Excellent. That's so cool.
Well, I think maybe the app is for subscribers who are already subscribed that they can actually listen on the go. I don't know, but you can certainly do that with Pandora. You can certainly do that with AOL Radio. There's at least one or two others where you can listen on the go. So I don't necessarily see where that's such a big bonus or how it will save them in any way, shape, or form.
Can I talk about my cocktail moment? Cocktail chatter moment?
Absolutely.
I know that Roman Polanski is kind of like really old news and most people don't even know who he is at this point, but he's a fugitive. He's a fugitive because of a statutory rape case that is, so old at this point. I mean, it's like 30 years old, if not, 40 years old. And,
And just to bring listeners up to speed, for those of you who have just arrived on the planet Earth, he, in the late 1970s, was at Jack Nicholson's house and had sex with an underage girl. I think she was 16.
Yeah, or even younger than that. She might have even been 13. I mean,
it was 13. You're right.
She, we know who she is. She has come out. I won't give her full name just because I don't think it's right, but her first name is Samantha, and she has said, enough. I don't care. Don't drop the charges. But he's been a fugitive ever since because, I mean, the case itself, there's a great documentary on it. Name I can't remember right now. But his case really was, it was pretty screwed up, and it was pretty corrupt, and he really got kind of, I think he's, what he did is disgusting and wrong. But the case itself was really messed up, and he fled to France?
He fled to France.
Where he's lived ever since.
Yes, and there's actually a really good documentary called Roman Polanski Wanted and Desired. And I saw the documentary last year.
Is that the one that was on HBO? Because that's the one I saw.
Yeah, I saw it in Sundance. I did not see it in Cannes, although my cocktail moment is that the producer and cinematographer stayed in the apartment that I was renting in Cannes last year because the film was invited to Cannes, and so they came and stayed with me and the people I was staying with.
That's a good cocktail moment.
That's a good cocktail moment. There were no cocktails involved, but still
too bad.
It was a lot of fun getting to meet them and the director and hearing.
I don't know why. I guess you're as equally as fascinated with the story as I am. I should not be fascinated by it. It's sort of disgusting and on all kinds of levels. But
it was the O.J. Simpson trial of its day.
And he essentially got away with it. I mean, he was convicted, but he fled the country before he could be sentenced.
Right. So, well, there was also a whole bunch of. You should really see the documentary, and I'll place a link to some information about it in the show notes, but the documentary goes into detail about how the trial was more corrupt than possibly the crime itself.
Yeah.
And how... Which,
it's fascinating, but, it still doesn't make what he did any less wrong, but Samantha, his victim, has dropped the charges, and yet still the courts will not allow the charges to be dropped. To me, at this point, no matter how awful it did, he is, it, drop him. The victim doesn't want to deal with this anymore. She wants the whole thing to go away, let it happen. But the U.S. a U.S. judge will not allow the case to be dismissed. The reason why this is news again is because, you know, does Polanski have to come back to go before the judge on this? Well, you know, I guess while it's decided whether the case should be dismissed. But of course, if he does come back and the case is not dismissed, he can end up in jail. So it's sort of, it's kind of convoluted, but at the same time, really sort of exciting.
Well, because he fled on the eve of his sentencing.
Yeah.
And if you see the documentary, you'll understand why he fled, and you would probably agree with his decision.
Yeah. I mean, before I saw the documentary, I thought he was just a horrible person. Now I still think he's a horrible person, but I understand why he fled. I mean, he had absolutely, he had no chance of not being in jail for life, essentially. And,
well,
you know,
well, I don't know about life, but certainly he was being
for a long, long time. Right. Yeah. And that's how corrupt the people involved in this case were.
Well, I know another story that you really, that's very close to your heart.
Oh, yeah.
Is this whole Endeavor William Morris merger. I know we talked a lot about it already.
I know it's so inside baseball, but I do find it really exciting. It's
well, nothing really much has happened in the last week, except that, as you predicted, there are tons of defections happening now, and not really amongst agents so much as amongst the
actual talent.
So Jason Patrick and Mira Sorvino off to ICM.
Yeah, but I mean, as much as that's sort of interesting, because and the author Mary Higgins Clark left too.
Endeavor's now trying to spin that, by the way, according to
Nikki
Fink.
Oh, you can. We'll get to that in a second. But what I want to point out is that does anybody really care about Mira Sorvino and Jason Patrick? I think Mary Higgins Clark is huge in the lit world because she's such a popular author. So it's sort of ironic that the people that most people have heard of, the actress most people have heard of, are actually less important than an author that most people have not heard of. But, I mean, Mira Sorvino, Jason Patrick, do they make money for anybody? I mean, who cares?
Well, apparently they didn't make money for Endeavor because that's the way Endeavor's spinning it, that they laid off the agent that represented Mira Sorvino and Jason Patrick. So, of course, those two clients left. And they're saying that they didn't even renew or re-sign Mary Higgins Clark. So the fact that she went to CAA, no big deal. We didn't even re-sign her.
Yeah, you didn't re-sign her because she didn't give you the opportunity to.
That's probably very true. Well, we once again failed to do it under an hour. So if you're
listening,
we'll get better. We will get better. Certainly we will get better. We have to. I mean, we have no place to go but up.
We could dig to China.
You know what? I don't think they'd understand us in China.
Yeah, probably not. Let's just sign off. www.showbizsandbox.com.
Good
or
point.
Call us.
Yes, you can call us. You can email us. If you want to email us, the email address is dirt@showbizsandbox.com, dirt@showbizsandbox.com.
Links and the phone number is 847-235-4899.
Yes, until we get the 800 number ported over to our new service here, 847-235-4899. Leave us a message. We hope to play some of the voicemails during the podcast. That will definitely shut us up. We hope to read some of your emails during the podcast. That will also shut us up. I feel like an infomercial.
I do too.
Well,
signing off, this is Karen Woodward.
Until next week, play nice.